from noon to 1:30, and these are going to include things like necessity defense, which is the defense that has been successfully used in Santa Barbara, California lodging laws, homeless camps as catalysts for social transformation. Santa Cruz Service Corps may be involved in that one. Encampment networks and linking up. And then, of course, what's going to be hot this summer. HUF is going to be there, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, my stalwart little group concerned with civil rights here in Santa Cruz. And then they're going to have Mark Levy doing some folk singing on Saturday afternoon. There'll be lunch, 1:55 to 3:15. Press conference, 2 to 2:45. Small groups, 3:15 to 4:40. And a final big meeting at the end for us to decide where we're at, what we want to do, where do we go from here. Closing ceremony, dinner, and we're not quite sure whether we have dinner on the site or off the site. If you want to volunteer your house, call up. By the way, if you have any questions about stuff you're hearing on the air that don't relate to the summit, and perhaps to the do, but you, because you want to call me, my number is 423-HUF, 423-4833. That's the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's a voicemail. You call in. Any questions, I'll try to get back to you. If you don't have a phone number, try to give me some idea where you are, and maybe we can find some way to link up. And HUF also meets every Wednesday at 8:30 at Baker's Square, which is a restaurant on Ocean Street, and people are invited to those meetings. But, of course, our next real meeting is going to be tomorrow, and people are invited to show up at 1135 North Branch of 40. That's the place to come. Then on Sunday, there's a meeting of what I mentioned before, this California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project. It's a regional quarterly meeting, and it'll be hosted by the San Francisco's Coalition on Homelessness and the Levitts, and we'll get more details about that if you come to the Friday or Saturday stuff. And that's, again, Right to Sleep Summit, and it's all happening. Come and join us. So, there is some interesting stuff happening on the streets. Let's turn to that for the moment.
25 to 6, we're down here in the endless Rio Theater hairline, but passing by is
Craig.
And Craig, you consider new rules at the Elm Street Mission?
Yeah. Yeah, we've got no longer can read any books other than the Bible whatsoever. No headphones allowed. I am not allowed to sit out on the strip and hold my sign anymore, and I hold the visions of a hamburger. I'm supposed to quit smoking cigarettes within a month or I'm kicked out.
Who decided on these new salutary regulations?
The so-called pastor, Larry.
And do we know, this is a significant change from the past policy, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
What do you think motivated this?
I really have no clue. I think maybe the second guy in charge, the second one under Larry, thought he was losing his power, so to speak. So I think that's what it has to deal with.
You think somebody got to Larry, eh?
I'm sure he got to Larry. We're told to go out and work, so I went and got a part-time little job. And because I was working and missed the mandatory volunteer work, I'm in all kinds of trouble now. You know, and I ended up having to go and work today, so I missed it again today, and I'm sure I'll be getting kicked out.
Of Elm Street?
I'm pretty sure. I'll find out later when I get there. But
so it's visions of hamburger and a place to stay.
Yeah. Yep.
What about other people there? Are they having in the same situation?
Yes, they are. Yeah. A lot of people are getting ready to leave. Instead of getting people closer to God, like is the plan, they're pretty much pushing people away.
How many people does this affect?
I'm not sure. A few.
I see.
Well, shit. We've been talking to
Craig.
And are you still? What are you doing? You're no longer the vision of the hamburger man outside the cinema.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am.
So you are, in essence, continuing what you're doing, and they're going to bounce you out.
It's my life. I'm not his child. It is my life, and I should be able to live it how I see fit. I can't do physical labor right now.
Right.
You know, because of the chronic kidney stones and the cancer, I can't do physical work, so.
How old are you?
40.
Well, shit, as I said before.
Yeah.
Appreciate the update. Anything you want to add to this?
Not yet, but come talk to me tomorrow in front of the theater, and I'll see what other new news I have.
Have to get a union going there or some sort.
So. All right.
I
think so.
Thank you.
It's like it's turning into a cult almost to me.
Thank you, Craig.
You're welcome.
And that was Craig. I ran into him outside the Rio Theater on Sunday night, a couple hours before my car was taken and then returned by the SCPD. Thank you, SCPD. Sounds like bad news at the Elm Street Mission. If anybody has any more stories on that, I'd like to hear what the situation is. I haven't talked directly to the Elm Street Mission. Important, though, because it's one of the few shelter opportunities for people with the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. I presume it's the same as last year, universally full every night. And I don't know if that's, I haven't actually checked on that in the last few days, and so I don't want to say that for sure. But I don't anticipate there's been a sudden expansion of shelter or drop in the number of people seeking shelter. In fact, I think it's increased, and shelter has stayed the same, as far as I know. So Elm Street is an important place for folks, and it looks like they, according to this, according to Craig, they're cracking down. And Craig is a guy, again, who sits outside the Cinema 9, often with his sign, Visions of a Hamburger, which, you know, he's trying to get spare change to engage in survival life functions. And, you know, it's hard work, actually, believe it or not. Panhandling may seem to be an easy thing to do, but it is not. It's humiliating, it's difficult, it's tedious, and it's very, very underpaid and unrewarding. I mean, there's just no question about it. I've actually interviewed people on the streets, and you make anywhere near minimum wage. I mean, it's horrible. The idea that you're somehow just sitting around with your feet in the air, getting money by doing nothing is very, very far from the truth. If you want to join this conversation, the phone number to call is 427-3772. If you want to talk to real people who are banding together as homeless people and engaging in productive and mutually self-supporting and community-supporting activity, come to the Right to Sleep Summit tomorrow at 1135 North Branch 40 at 5 o'clock, and then come on Saturday and on Sunday. It's going to continue for two more days. Right to Sleep Summit actually just goes till Saturday, but I'm thinking of the civil rights meeting that's happening the next day on Sunday as a part of that, and it really is. So, yeah, it's open to the public. Come on down, but remember, our focus is getting you to do, to help restore civil rights for homeless people in Santa Cruz, and that's kind of the bottom line. Call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. You're tuned to 96.3.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Julia Benefred, home.
Hey, Julia. Wow. Well, it's not often that we get famous poets calling in.
I have a couple of homeless poems, and I've also been writing about Jerusalem.
Okay.
Just a homeless one.
I want to hear about what you've got. I should introduce you first. You're calling in from Berkeley, California. We actually invited you to come to the Right to Sleep Summit, but you're not able to make it. So instead, you're going to give us your poetry, and you're the author of what, 44 books of poetry?
Yes.
Let me ask you to speak up as loudly as you can. We have a bizarre board here, and it's hard to tell whether you're coming through.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Better, very good. Let me ask you first, before you begin reading, how are things in Berkeley?
Well, we just had the 33rd anniversary of People's Park, and I read the last poem in my new book, Beside Myself. It was how I got started blowing soap bubbles, which was part of a People's Park protest.
And how did that go over?
Fine. It's a big crowd, too. Very good party.
Is People's Park currently in danger of being seized by either the university or any private interests?
If it is, I haven't heard about it. There's a lot of other hectic things going on.
Uh-huh. Anything?
The most dangerous thing coming up is an election with the rent board.
Tell us about that.
Well, we have to make sure that the good guys get elected to the rent board, tenant-friendly people.
Well, at least you have a rent board. We can't get Mayor Crone here to even consider introducing rent control. It's a sad thing. But you've had rent control up there since, what, 1979 or something?
Something like that, a long time.
And you're in a rent-controlled place?
Yes, thank God. I couldn't afford anything else. Who can?
Well, just so people get a sense of the kind of a worthless person that rent control is helping, can you read us a couple of your poems now?
Sure. The homeless are our dirty underwear. We've got to get the tired men pushing broken shopping carts, the waddling bag ladies with plastic flowered raincoats, and the skinny young kids spare changing dog food for their dog and all her nuzzling puppies off the street. Off the street before the bombs fall. I can't explain the connection, but I remember. Suppose you were run over by a truck, and when they undressed you in the morgue and you were wearing that dirty underwear in front of everyone, wouldn't you just die of shame? So when the bombs fall, everyone must be wearing clean underwear, good clothes, looking well-fed, and happily married in houses with gardens and swings for the children, even when it isn't true, and especially when it isn't true. It's a matter of patriotism. We have to suffer to look good enough for death, like dressing for a job. The homeless weren't American enough to live, and they're certainly not American enough to die. They're such an embarrassment. Suppose the world ends and there's still broken shopping carts in ruined cities. Suppose the broken shopping carts never go away.
All right. Give us another one.
Okay. Kind of fun to write from a sarcastic side.
Mm-hmm.
This one's different. Old man in the night city. I followed an old man's cough through the night city like a trail of breadcrumbs. I never saw him. He scuttled rat quick, rat quiet through piles of tin cans and down alleys that weren't there in the day. The old man pulled the night city after him like a toy wagon full of flickering signs. Girls open all night, self-service. I felt the old man turning far ahead, never in a straight line, skinny, bent over his coughs as if they were valuable, better than a wallet, better than wine. I passed hulking guys with jailhouse tattoos who'd scare me at high noon in the middle of a crowd, but they all turned away. They couldn't hear the old man coughing, but he was reflected in my face, and he scared them. Well, maybe they just thought I was mad, and with crazy people, you never know, better not take chances. I passed a corner hooker who chewed her knuckles, her red pig fingernails cut into her palm, and she clutched the edge of her white leather miniskirt in case I splashed it with magic mud. In the flowing alleys of the night city, I passed the spare changer begging for coins to cover his eyes. I passed Jesus making wine for the winos. They nodded like cabbages and blinked when he stopped talking. I passed the street kid with a fleet of paper airplanes in case the terrorists came back. He'd written his name on all of them. The old man's coughs were raspy, deliberate. Sure, there was nothing worth his attention. I knew I'd never catch him, but I wanted to see something great, big, huge, and shiny, a comet or a vision, try to make him look. I knew the old man wouldn't look. He never does, but if I was close enough. But it was too late. Some non-colored daylight chased the night city away, and I took a bus home.
Wow, nice.
And there's been all this Mideast stuff going on?
Go, tell me.
Okay, two Jerusalem poems. Jerusalem feeds the birds. Jerusalem went to the park with a bag of bullets to feed the birds. If they're good enough for people, they're good enough for birds. And besides, Jerusalem explained, bullets are cheaper than bird seed at the moment. The birds flew away, but they didn't go far. They rose, their wings a spinning, flashing, living shield for Jerusalem's sorrowful face. Muscled feathers to protect her dark eyes from seeing. A chorus of sweet trills and chirpings to protect Jerusalem from understanding the cries in her streets and the silence that follows.
Hmm.
One more?
Or more than one more.
Well, okay. I've got plenty.
We got time.
Jerusalem's mirror. Jerusalem was combing her long, rolling hair, her smoky prayers in front of a three-way mirror, one for each face that despaired of her, when another bus exploded and the mirror splattered with blood. Jerusalem touched the tip of one finger in the blood and licked it clean with one flick of her cat tongue. I was looking for my own reflection under the blood, she told the Lord. But all I tasted was blood, and it all tastes the same. Don't they have anything else to do? They're also looking for your reflection under the blood, the Lord answered. And when they die, it's too late. I don't understand, Jerusalem mused. I've seen ambulances mate with vultures in midair, both fighting over living meat, all three screaming about love. It's so ugly. The Lord waved a hand in a mock magician's gesture, and the mirror was clean again. Jerusalem sank into her own half-smile like a hot bath at the end of a hard day. That's better, she said, but it's not an answer. My stones overflow with broken faces. Machine guns emptied into the earth shoot all the eyes out of potatoes, and I don't want to see either. Even death gets indigestion and takes Pepto-Bismol. When they die, it's too late, repeated the Lord. And when they live, she glanced at the Lord, her voice a husky whisper, one hand at her soft throat, afraid but daring him anyway. When they live, it's for you. They put stamps on their shadows and mail them to you a dozen times a day. Can't you change this? The Lord looked at his hands a long time and finally shook his head. Neither spoke. Jerusalem turned back to her mirror and studied her glowing beauty. But this time, she did not smile.
Bravo. Well, give us a few more.
Okay. Jerusalem walked through war. Jerusalem walked through war, whistling for a pack of dogs, barking like guns, whistling for a pack of guns, barking like dogs, to relieve themselves by fire hydrants and spilled brains. M16, you pretty little thing, wag your tail and do your business. Jerusalem walked through war among crumpled bodies and stole their bloody clothes. My lover should always be naked, she explained. I bury them in a soft shroud of kisses, but my lips cannot forgive that none of them kissed me back. Am I not beautiful? Jerusalem walked through war, through burning ruins, from a little Arab market with scorched oranges rolling in the dust to the Church of the Nativity where saints' stained glass faces cough from the smoke, to the child's empty stroller of the Passover massacre. Fire is a ragged child, Jerusalem sings to, clapping her hands to make the flames dance, to make the smoke smile, to make the fire grow up to be big and strong, to rub the back of her hand against charred wood and draw sooty black hearts on any wall still standing. Jerusalem walked barefoot on ashes like sand on the beach, wriggling her toes. Jerusalem walked through war. War walked through Jerusalem.
Any more? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Give us a few more.
Jerusalem's children. Jerusalem cradles an army at each breast. They drink her blood and she sings to them. Beautiful babies who cry for me, who die for me. My long hair made of prayers tickles your tummy, teases your grabbing hands. Reach from the sands and laugh. Can you laugh for me? You look so cute, your little tank and suicide belt are flanking death for me. Why won't you laugh for me? I'd love to hear you laugh. I don't listen, she complained to the Lord. Neither do you, he replied.
Onward.
How are you doing on time? You want me to read all of them and you can edit later?
Well, hey, we'll have to get some audience response. But,
that's cool.
Read another one, and, have you got anything that's non-Jerusalem?
Oh.
I mean, I'm not saying, we can do a few more from Jerusalem, too, but I wanted to spice it up or, you know, intersperse it with a couple of others.
Yeah, I do.
Well, read what you feel that, you know, what you want to read. You're the poet. You go ahead.
Yeah, but this is about, you know, the right to sleep. You need,
Yeah, that's actually what that's what the summit's going to be about.
Yeah. Well, you've got my book, don't you? I could read something from the book on the, you know, on the homeless stuff.
Sure, you can do that. We're talking with poet Juliet Vinograd of Berkeley, who is one of the foremost poets about, well, folks who are out there on the streets, folks who are in the hotels, folks who are not necessarily in the richest of places, although there's a richness to her poetry which is undeniable, and let's get some more of it.
Okay. In just a sec, I gotta find something. Oh, did I read you the Sugar Ray?
Not sure. Why don't you do it?
I went to the candy store and they had one of those big white sugar Easter eggs covered with pink sugar flowers and bows with a peephole to a seam inside. I looked expecting to see toy fairies under nugget fudge mushrooms among jelly bean stones or a towered magic castle on a rock candy cliff sprinkled with powdered sugar snow where all your dreams come true. Instead I saw a small ordinary house with a lawn like people have on TV in other parts of the country, maybe, and maybe on the moon, a front porch with a rocker, a pink camellia bush by the door, blue striped curtains pulled back. I peeped, I peered, I saw a big plush maroon sofa, a lean back comfortable brown chair, and a bookcase up to the ceiling. Sunlight played on the dark blue rug like a kitten. But I don't know where it came from. The more I looked, the more space I saw. The kitchen door was open. I could faintly hear singing and smell a roast coming out of the oven. Outside the candy store, the city of faded, furnished rooms or studios where most things work most of the time while the rent goes up like a missile to defend us from ourselves. The streets full of snail people and the shells they lived in are wrenched away, evicted, eyes full of slime and tears. The ordinary house in the Sugar Egg becomes the magic castle that nobody reaches where all your dreams come true. I didn't want to eat the Sugar Egg anymore. I wanted to move in.
That's good.
And the next one's called Out on the Street at Night.
Uh-huh.
Cold wind can't blow the chip off his shoulder. Chapped knuckles and pockets, cracked leather jacket. He looks 19 coming towards you, 29 walking away. Hides doorway thin against the locked door. Scuffed shoes, bitten lower lip. Out walks memories, girls, dust, roast beef coming out of the oven, dust. It doesn't matter. He walks all night, stomping to stay warm under the stars. Other people's dreams, fat as pigeons, waddle over his feet. He kicks them away, angry. They always come back. So does the day. You know, these are ones from the book. Oh, three-masted shopping carts. Three-masted shopping carts, cresting concrete waves, Oh, damn it, hold on, I'm being beepled.
We're listening to Julia Vinaigrette reading some poetry from her current book, as well as some unpublished poetry. She lives in Berkeley.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Crazy friend of mine.
So what's the name of this book you're reading from, Julia?
From Beside Myself.
And how can people get a copy of this book?
Well, Cody's has it and I have it. I'm in Berkeley and I always sell them.
If you want to get a copy of Julia's poetry, you can always give me a call here in Santa Cruz for all you local listeners at 423-4833, 423-HUFF. And if you want to catch Julia, you haven't, of course, got a website, have you?
No, I can give them my address. Would that do?
Sure.
1630 University Avenue, number 34, Berkeley, California, 94703.
And do it one more time.
1630 University Avenue, number 34, Berkeley, California, 94703. Yes. Send a check. Can I say how much it costs?
Sure.
$5. I'll make it out to me.
That will help you pay your rent for the next month, right?
It most certainly will.
And an occasional bus trip up to the Med. Wow. Well, listen, give us one final poem, and then then we'll move on.
Would they be interested in, how I became the Bubble Lady, People's Park one?
We'll find out. Why don't you read it?
I could find something that was more homeless, if you like.
Whenever you'd like.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Here's one. It's short. It's called Cagers.
Mm-hmm.
The animals at the zoo pacing behind bars are beautiful because they can't get out. No one will let them out.
The tired men pushing shopping carts are ugly because they can't get in. No one will let them in. No one ever made a leopard push his cage uphill. The animals' bars are steel, the tired men, their bars are stolen. Stolen shopping carts full of cloth gone rotten, the ship's shriveled plums in case there's time. There isn't time, only cages. The tired men, these aren't their real faces. Their real faces are locked under glass at the pawn shop. The ticket stubs are inside the lion's cage, by the bloody rock where the lion tries to pretend his food is alive and he is alive. Wild shopping carts have sharp teeth than the caged lion. In the cold night, shopping carts bite holes in tired men's hands. Children are taken to see the animals at the zoo. Children are told not to look at those men.
That's a great poem. Give us a couple more.
Oh, boy.
And for those of you who don't know, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is a poetry reading by Julia Vinograd. She was caught in her hotel room as she was probably about to watch a good TV show or read a good book, I'm not sure. And here she is giving us some good stuff.
I don't know if this matches. Almost the opposite of what you're doing. It's called Dream of a Teenage Runaway.
Okay. Speak up a little if you can.
What? Oh, okay. Untidy black, curly hair, thin, a small tremble in his lower lip, the dark under his eyes shows he doesn't get much sleep. There's his nightmare. He's hitching at twilight, backpack, blue jeans, thumb, a small town at his back. He's looking at huge purple-red mountains, wind bare, raw as God's butcher shop. The road curves between them. Then a bird squawks and he looks up further. The mountains and the road are toys on his parents' dining room carpet. He thought he'd got away. The stars just coming out of the bowl of peas his father's reaching for with his big, steady hand. He's going to eat them all. His other hand taps on the good white tablecloth in ominous silence. The father's still waiting for an explanation. The hitchhiker 500 miles away opens his mouth, though he knows it's useless. But he can't make a sound. The white line in the middle of the road is tied tight around his throat and getting tighter. The other end of the white line tangles in a ball of string the kitten's playing with under the table. The teenager wakes up shivering. He looks around. Has the dining room table snuck up behind him? He breathes again. He's still in the middle of nowhere. He's safe.
Good. And give us your last poem, at least for this evening.
Okay, the People's Park one or something else?
Your choice. And don't worry about the length, that's fine.
Okay, it did all happen. It's how I became the Bubble Lady. I don't know if the Santa Cruz people are all interested.
Well, we'll educate them.
Okay, and it's actually, I read it at the 33rd anniversary of People's Park, which was this last Sunday. People's Park made me the Bubble Lady. There was going to be a huge street battle the next day. Everyone was mad. I was mad, but I was a pacifist, and besides, if I threw a rock, I'd probably hit my foot. But I wanted to throw something. I wasn't a very peaceful pacifist. So I decided to fill a shopping bag with bottles of soap bubbles and stay up all night blowing bubbles in the park, and if they wanted to arrest me, fine. I planned a one-night symbolic protest. So that evening I went to the park and told the two rookie cops left to guard it what I was going to do, expecting handcuffs at any moment. They were young, large, bored, they pretty much shrugged. The overhead streetlights went on, bubbles looked different at night. After about 20 minutes, one of the rookies asked, "Hey, can we try?" I couldn't believe it. I mean, they were cops, but I handed them each a bottle, and damned if they didn't start a contest. "Mine's bigger than yours." "Yeah, but look at mine move. It's the motion that counts." I quote, "I do not comment." Then a cop car circling the block screeched to a halt, and an officer about 50, also large, stalked over to us demanding, "What the hell?"
Maybe he thought I dosed his rookies. This was the 60s, after all. One of the rookies offered him a bottle of bubbles. He snorted that he didn't play childish games, turned on his heel and left. While the other rookie commented, not lowering his voice all that much, he's just scared because his would be too small to see. Again, I only quote. The rest of the night was a blur. I'd only planned the one night and thought it would end in jail. I'm not very brave, but it was for the park, this park that's always in trouble with a bad rap, and when I show it to people, they don't understand. The next day, I took the bubbles on the street. If they work on cops, they'll work on anyone. And little kids started calling me Bubble Lady, and the rest is history. When I look at the park in winter, all cold and muddy in the rain, I see my soap bubbles under the earth, with daffodil bulbs, tulips, snowdrops, waiting for spring. And sometimes I see the young faces of those rookies, still playing their games. Okay?
You are one good poet. Thanks.
I hope that's not too out of date for the kids here.
Not at all. Not at all.
And you're perfectly welcome to select. You probably don't want that many Jerusalem poems at a homeless summit.
Well, we're going to actually, I think I have some of your tapes, which I may, you know, I think we even have your video. Didn't you do a video?
I might have. I know I did tapes.
Yeah, I think you did tapes and a CD. Maybe you didn't do a video, but you... Or if you did do a video, I don't know if I have it.
Well, there's lots of homeless stuff on the CDs. You can or the tapes. You can certainly disperse that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that for years you've given me permission to reprint your poetry as part of the street sheet, and you do regularly appear in Street Spirit.
Yes.
Some of your new stuff will probably be in the next issue when it comes out in early May. This is early May already. I guess it should be coming out. Well, picking it up.
One is not yet.
Right, I think it'll be, but next week we should be able to get it.
Okay, I had two pieces in the last one. The homeless are dirty underwear was in there.
Well, I won't get into that at this time, but...
Okay. All right.
Hey.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Julia Vinograd, street poet, Berkeley. Her poems speak so loudly that they... Well, they make all the rest of us all the richer, and it's something that never fails to amaze me, how she can find the imagery, find the metaphors, flip them, and house one inside the other, and turn the others inside out, and come up with this wonderful finished picture. It's amazing. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spear's Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor on the Streets. And you can come in off the streets if you want tomorrow at the Homeless, I should say the Right to Sleep Summit, 1135 North Branson 40.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hello. I was just trying to listen to Julia Vinograd.
Uh-huh.
And the signal was poor today, scratchy.
Uh-huh.
I just wondered why that is and if I'm on the wrong, you know, 90s.
It's
90.3.
No, you're in the right signal.
And I have...
Where are you?
I'm on Westcliff Drive in Santa Cruz.
Huh. Shouldn't be bad. Of course, it's really... It depends to some extent on whether... Was there another signal interfering? Like another...
Yeah, I think there was another station.
You know, that's one... The other thing you can do is you can try to go on the internet because we do stream. And we
don't have a
computer.
Do that, no.
For those who are interested, it's www.microradio.net/fr.
I'm going to write that for
okay.
My son.
www.microradio, one word, M-I-C-R-O, microradio.
Radio.
Right, microradio dot
yeah.
net, N-E-T, slash F-R-S-C for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And I'll probably have some poetry of Julia Vinograd's at the summit tomorrow, in case you want to come to that, or you can always call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, and we'll... put you in touch with how to get her poetry directly. She's
That's H-U-F-F?
That is H-U-F-F.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what is the meeting tomorrow?
It is a Right to Sleep Summit where people from up and down the coast are coming from different homeless encampments. Ones that have actually survived for several years in some of the big cities, Portland, Oregon's Dignity Village, Seattle's Tent City 3, Isla Vista, California's Camp Home Sweet Home, which is actually a relatively recent one, and of course Santa Cruz is Camp Paradise.
Oh, right, sure.
And they're trying to figure out Well, how they can all get together and support each other, and how they can help homeless people in their cities, you know.
I see.
It's all about the right to sleep and the fact that most people, as you know, in Santa Cruz have a sleeping ban they have to be worried about every night. It's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night.
Right. And that summit is at
1135 North Brancaforte Avenue. And it starts at 5 o'clock tomorrow night and runs through 6 o'clock Sunday evening.
I see. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ah, it's always nice when you actually hear a voice you haven't heard before on the air. Thank you, caller, for calling in. Means that other people are listening, and there's hope yet that it may be more than the same eight people all talking to each other. Although at the summit, the original reason for the summit was to get together the 50 to 100 homeless activists who showed up at city council, who showed up at protests, and see if we have the energy to do something this summer. And if we have the energy, maybe someone else will have the finances, and maybe we can have some connections from folks in other cities. Maybe we can do what Santa Barbara did in 1986 when Mitch Snyder got together with his Creative Community for Nonviolence organization in Washington, D.C. He was a national homeless activist and started a campaign, come to Santa Barbara, go to sleep, go to jail, come to the Fig Tree August 1st. And that campaign, even before August 1st, caused the Santa Barbara City Council to end its sleeping ban. For 4 years, there was no sleeping ban until a opportunistic mayoral candidate called Hal. That was his name. Hal Conklin, I think. Happy Hal Conklin, I called him. Did some politicking, and a judge changed the law as well through judicial interpretation. Now Santa Barbara is quite a beacon of hope, and we're going to have activists from Santa Barbara. Nuff said Nancy McCready of Santa Barbara Homes on Wheels, Jenny Jett of the Isla Vista's Camp Home Sweet Home, talking about the successes down there. Camp Home Sweet Home was able to, still survives as an encampment, and it actually got the Parks and Rec Department, for the first time anywhere in the country that I've heard of, actually propose legalizing sleeping in a park as part of the law. Amazing kind of idea. It was defeated 3-2 in the final vote, but that was very close, and the actual law that is now the case in Isla Vista and their park district is very, very lenient. It states that, it's not lenient enough, but it states that for 12 hours that you can be told you have to leave the park if you're caught sleeping, but you can come back in 12 hours and you don't get a ticket. So it's unusually lenient law. Still not good enough, of course, but interesting because people came together and fought and are continuing to fight.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Well, I just called to say, you know, you said it's nice to hear that people are listening. And I'm listening, but I'm not really listening, even though I'm listening.
Oh, you better listen more, man.
Well, I'm listening on the internet. Well, I'm not really listening, but up here in Olympia, Washington. And I just wanted to say that I saw the Santa Cruz Sentinel today on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and I was just, like, really disgusted by what was going on with the city council having a town hall meeting and giving out 300 tickets to a select, chosen, uncontroversial number of people, and then having it at the Rio Theater or
something? The Del Mar Theater.
Yeah, the Del Mar Theater, and then they showed a movie, and the newspaper article was like Dan White or something.
Yeah, Dan Whitebread, we call him.
It just really grossed me out that, you know, fascism has gone so far, and it has such a squeaky, clean, smiley face, and it's just really insidious that Santa Cruz used to be this great, progressive, kind of spiritual direction, you know, that people were going to, and now you can see that the tools of fascism, the Scott Kennedys of the world, have really just created a monster, and it's really appalling that they're showing entertainment when they should be sitting around talking about really important issues related to human rights and environmental issues.
Well, frankly, the movies are better than the city council meeting, and not that Suspicion is such a hot Hitchcock film. That's, I think, what they showed.
But you couldn't get in. They didn't give you a ticket, did they?
You know, I didn't try to get a ticket. I don't know if I would have been turned away, but I know that one of the problems is that the council's, for all its talk about, this is supposed to be, I think they're into the budget hearing, supposedly, you're not getting any real examination of, you know, they're planning on cutting back. They presented prefabricated budget proposals. One to all of them essentially pretty much keeping the police departments at maximum force, the police and fire department. Since the police and parks and rec, two law enforcement agencies in town, take up more than 50% of the budget, it really means that everybody else has to suffer. And there's been no real alternatives for cutting the police department, even though they run millions and millions of dollars on cost overruns for their, for example, their police, their new, they had a shooting range in their new police station. I mean, it's kind of quite a scandal.
What upsets me even more is that the process that we go through to deal with these issues as a free, well, as we used to be a free, you know, democracy, it's the process is you have town hall meetings and people can show up and address their issues. And when they're only passing out 300 tickets and the theme is fun and entertainment and non-controversial issues, you know, we're circling the drain faster every day. And I really want to, if anybody's living in Santa Cruz, and here's this message, you know, go out and bust something up. That doesn't mean bust physical reality up. It could, but it means, like, you know, making a statement, you know, riling people up, getting people to think about how far we've gone in the wrong direction in terms of treating people with respect and treating the planet with respect.
Well, we're trying to bust up the city council's decorum rules. You may have heard that if you've been listening on free radio. You know, if there's a lawsuit that I've initiated. I gave a silent Heil Crown to the mayor. You heard about that?
Oh, yeah. How could we not hear about it with you on the radio all this time, Robert?
No, I blather and blather. It's true. But, this is, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say how far that's going to go, and I want to encourage people who have been to city council who are listening, and that probably doesn't include you up there in Olympia, Washington.
No, I'm not listening.
But still, if you've seen abuses at city council, now's the time to call the Huff line at 423-HUFF. If you've seen anything, it was involved censorship, exclusion of people, a selective process. I got to say that I don't think it's such a blatant violation of the Brown Act to give out only 300 tickets if those tickets were only for, for the council meeting. The council meeting cannot be closed, so it has to be open to the public. What they can do is they can say fire regulations prohibit you from having more than a certain number of people in the building, and they have to pipe the rest of it out onto the streets.
Yeah, and I've been to a lot of great riots in Santa Cruz. The New Year's Eve 1994, when the police marched full width into a crowd.
That was under Lieutenant Patty Saponi led that one.
Yeah, I mean, and that was just sick. It was the same night as the Chiapas Rebellion down in southern Mexico, and it was just like the entire police squad, like my friends would see them walking around, and they were pumped up for a big football game, and they were going in to bash some heads, and as soon as they started marching into the crowd telling them it was an unauthorized gathering at, 9 minutes after midnight, the bottle started flying, and the third bottle to fly through the air smashed on the helmet of a police cop, and the entire crowd erupted like they just scored a touchdown in a football game. And from that point on, for 2 or 3 hours, there were nothing but bottles flying. And the Rodney King, right after Rodney King, it's the 10-year anniversary of the riots, that they weren't really riots, it was just busting stuff up at the police station, which should be done more often. And so, I don't know, just my last point I wanted to make is that it's so funny, this brotherhood of police that protects its own. But then you look at Department of Fish and Game, you look at wildlife biologists that have to go out and enforce the law, and it's the exact opposite. There is no brotherhood of police that protects its own. There's no lack of scrutiny from the law. When it comes to protecting the environment and costing corporations money, all of a sudden they're bad cops, and it's bad cops and good cops. Good cops oppress the masses and make sure nobody rebels, and that's what the society considers good cops, and then bad cops are the ones that cost business and corporations money, and we just got to turn everything upside down. And so I got to get going, but I just wanted to call up and say hi to everybody in Santa Cruz and say I'm not really listening. So
thank you for not listening.
Bye.
Well, let's have a few more calls from you non-listeners out there. That sounds great. And a tip of the hat to Bob Listener, by the way, who's an old-timer here in Santa Cruz, owns actually a building here in town. And he was the man who hosted the first cold and rainy night shelter, which Jane Immler's Hunger Fast opened in 1985. Paul Lee, Paige Smith, Fred Gray, and others arranged and ran that shelter. And Listener recently has been suggesting, he's been supportive of my lawsuit. I believe that's a fair thing to say. The lawsuit that says you can't arrest people for silent gestures at city council, even if you don't like them. There may be some videos of the... I don't think we have video of the 1994 New Year's Eve police riot, which the caller talked about. Indeed, it was Lieutenant Patty Saponi who not only began started the riot by trying to shut down the town clock early, and then hitting people's on the knuckles with batons, and directing officers to do that, or else having it happen without any kind of sanction that I heard about. But she also, or someone under her command, steered everybody into the downtown area, and people started breaking windows. And in a way, perhaps the police learned, because I was looking at a video of what happened 5 months later in May of 1994, when there were the sit-down demonstrations and another police riot, where a police officer hit a woman in the stomach with a baton. She miscarried. Another man's either kidney was injured or his liver was injured, all in a nonviolent but, you know, tumultuous protest involving the right to sit down and eat food with Food Not Bombs at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific in the wake of the Kennedy downtown ordinances, which made it and make it illegal to sit on the sidewalk. It's illegal now to sit only on 10 feet from a business, the kind of stuff that prohibits sitting anywhere near the New Leaf Yuppie Planter area where... I should also add, there's some interesting reports coming out of New Leaf about discrimination against patrons at New Leaf. I got a story from a man who wants to remain anonymous, but he may go public, who talked about being a regular customer at New Leaf for years. He actually talked to me, made me late for the show, or I made myself late because I was really interested in his story. He apparently, he asked the person who was handling his food, and apparently dropped it, to, you know, to wear the food gear that you're supposed to wear as a food handler, and she took animus at this, and then she complained to her boss, and he explained that he'd been a long-time customer there, and that, you know, she said, we're no longer going to heat up items from the other parts of the deli for you. And he said, fine, well, I'll just go to the staff of life. And then suddenly he found he was ousted from the store, ousted from New Leaf. And kind of done this, told by sort of one of the, I call them thugs. I don't know if the guy's a thug or not, but bouncers who show up at these places and kind of motion you outside until you can't be in the store. It sits badly with me, and I've seen other instances of this at New Leaf in the last year. I mean, I've been concerned that New Leaf did not speak up against this privatization of the sidewalk, this coup to harass and economically and socially cleanse the sidewalk of young people there, the young people that were out there. And that pissed me off, but, you know, all right, we disagree on that issue. Boycott them. You know, I said, because they're doing this. But now when I learn they're discriminating, if, in fact, this man's story is correct, against people in this arbitrary way. And this fellow has been homeless at different times. In fact, I think he's homeless now. That makes me even more concerned about what's going on there. But it's getting to be time to move on. We are nearing the end of this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, and I want to remind you the next edition is going to be a recorded edition on Sunday from 10 to 1:30. Also, there is a special banner party happening. Courtney and Cassandra Brown, famous for their lawsuit, their successful lawsuit, still unfortunately, which hasn't had a really ultimately successful outcome, but has been successful at a lower level, telling Caltrain not to tear down their bed sheets, which they put up next to the flag, which say, at what cost? Indeed, concerns about this incredible war that the Bush regime has gotten us into. And there's going to be a bed sheet, sort of a bed sheet party that's going to be happening at the town clock Sunday at 5 o'clock. Also, at 4 o'clock, I believe it's the town clock, there's going to be the Million Man Marijuana March, or Million Man Marijuana Day, coming up on Saturday. So you're going to want to check out those two events, while, of course, you are checking out the Right to Sleep Summit, which is going to be happening starting tomorrow night at 5 o'clock at 1135 North Branson 40. You get some details by giving a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF. And you can do that. And you can also contact Thomas Levitt directly at 425-3646. So think about that. And give us a call. Come on to the Homeless Summit, the Right to Sleep Summit. I think it's something you'll find, particularly if you're interested in ending the sleeping ban, worth your time. Thanks for being with us, and let's go out on a little Just Kiddin', one of my favorite groups. See you tomorrow.
Right here from Santa Cruz, California. Yeah, it's a group we know well and love. Just Kiddin', off of one of their many, many cassettes, and finally recorded onto CD. Did we get the cover for that one around here, Phil? Yeah, it's in the bag. It's in the bag. I don't know. It's around here somewhere. Robert, I'll figure it out. There we go. Just Kiddin'.